Our disposition can determine the decisions we make and the direction we take. Hello everyone, I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Our host is author, teacher, and itinerant speaker, Kenneth Wong. Well, yesterday we heard of a nation at a crossroads. They had a decision to make. Do they believe God, or do they believe what they see with their eyes? They made the wrong choice. Today, Ken shares the story of a young woman who also found herself at a crossroads. And as she contemplated her plight, given the fact she was a childless widow, she had to decide whom she would follow. Would she make the right choice? In just a moment, Kenneth presents part two of the program titled, Going Forward.
Hello everyone, and if you have just joined us, welcome to our second part of our series on Going Forward, what it means to advance in the path of life and the things we encounter. We have been considering the first category of things that we are likely to encounter at major crises in life, and that is crossroads. We considered a nation at the crossroads from Numbers chapter 13, when Israel was poised to enter the promised land at Kadesh Barnea, but did not. We often do not realize it at the moment of decision-making. We often speak of making decisions, don't we? We make decisions. But have we realized that decisions also make us? There is both a cost as well as a consequence to all the decisions and choices that we make in the path of life. And if we consider the example of Israel as a nation at the crossroads at Kadesh Barnea, we find that there are far-reaching repercussions of that momentous about-turn and their failure to seize the day. There are critical junctures in life when a decision determines destiny. Israel's history would have been rewritten far differently had they moved right on in faith as both Caleb and Joshua had advocated. There might have been less chapters in the book of Numbers. Moving on from chapter 13 to triumph and conquest and possession of the promised land, instead of a long-drawn wandering around in the wilderness. The consequence of that choice to stay out instead of moving right in by faith is that they lost an entire generation, what I often refer to as the Generation X, EX for Exodus. Instead of moving into the privilege of possessing the land as God had promised, they consigned themselves to a long march to nowhere in the wilderness wanderings over the next 40 years. Think about what it means to be set back for 40 long years of wandering about up and down and all around in the wilderness. You know, the historical long march that happened in China was only for a year, between 1934 and 1935. But this was for 40 long years. It's a year lost and wasted in the wilderness for every single day of the 40-day reconnaissance mission. It was a stark and a stern reminder from God of what might have been for them. But Caleb never forgot that day, and he never gave up or abandoned his position of faith in what God had promised. In Joshua chapter 14, when under the leadership of Joshua, the new and younger generation had taken possession of parts of the promised land, not all, it came time to divide or distribute the occupied land so far amongst the 12 tribes of Israel. And here comes Caleb, being the most senior amongst them, reminding Joshua of how it was on that day 45 years ago. He was now 85 years of age, still fit and strong, but not satisfied with simply claiming the parts of the territories that they had occupied. Listen to what he said in Joshua chapter 14, verse 6. This is what Caleb said to Joshua. You know the word which the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought back word to him as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God. So Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land where your foot has trodden shall be your inheritance and your children's forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God. And now, behold, the Lord has kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years. Ever since the Lord spoke this word to Moses while Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, here I am this day, 85 years old. As yet I am as strong this day as on the day that Moses sent me. Just as my strength was then, so now is my strength for war, both for going out and for coming in. Now listen closely to what he actually asked for in verse 12. Now therefore, give me this mountain of which the Lord spoke in that day. For you heard in that day how the Anakim were there, and that the cities were great and fortified. It may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. So he asked for the high ground still occupied by the Anakim, the giants that they were so afraid of, which for all these past 45 years continued to stand as a mute testimony to their spirit of disobedience, unbelief, and fear. And Caleb is here saying, by the grace of God, this is what I have been kept alive for. Give that to me so that I may claim the prize and finish the job that God has called us to. This was the spirit of Caleb. It is the spirit of wholly following the Lord, without reserve and without regrets. Now let's consider a second example from the Old Testament. This is not an example of corporate decision-making, but of personal decision-making. Here we find a widow at the crossroads in the story of Ruth, and it's a positive example about a good decision and a right choice. Let's go to chapter 1 of the delightful book of Ruth. Ruth was one of two young daughters-in-law of a woman called Naomi in the land of Moab. Naomi had gone to the land of Moab from Israel with her husband when there was a famine in their home country. She herself was widowed after some time, but comforted when her two sons took wives of the women of Moab. In chapter 1, verse 4 of the book of Ruth. And we're told that the name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other was Ruth. And they dwelt there about 10 years. Then both Naomi's sons, Mahlon and Chilion, also died. So the woman survived her two sons and her husband. Mahlon was probably the elder son, as he was named first, and we learn in the later chapters that Ruth was the wife of Mahlon. We have here the sad prospect of three widowed women: Naomi, the mother-in-law, and her own two recently widowed daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth. These two younger widows were faced with the prospect of either returning to the homeland of their mother-in-law and their former husbands, or to remain in Moab and return to their own families and households. Verse 6, Naomi arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread. That is to say, the famine was over. Verse 7, therefore she went out from the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you, as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each in the house of her husband. So she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, surely we will return with you to your people. For Naomi, the mother-in-law, it was a homecoming, because she was going back to familiar territory. But for either of them, it was trailblazing. It was a foreign territory that they were going to. The two young widows were faced with the prospect of venturing out into an alien and new environment. The choice was between sticking with the known or striking out into the unknown. And after some to-ing and fro-ing, they each made their choice. In verse 14, then they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, "Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." So they parted ways. Orpah chose to stay back, but Ruth chose to set out. One opted for the known, the other for the unknown. Once again, we see this principle in action. How disposition determines the decision that is made and the direction to go. Whether to go or to stay. And each of them, Ruth and Orpah, chose according to what governed their heart and mind. And like the 10 verses to 12 in the reconnaissance mission team of Israel at Kadesh Barnea, so there was either a spirit of fear or faith that drove the decision. One may see the prospect of a tougher life, but the other may see the prospect of a better life. We'll find the clue to Ruth's decision in the following verse 16. But Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go, and wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God." It wasn't just a loyalty and an affinity with her mother-in-law Naomi, but behind and above all this lies the affinity and the loyalty to the God of Israel, to whom she was introduced and whom she had come to know. She was not going to return to her Moabite gods, but she will cling to the God of Israel, whom she had come to know. That was the real and underlying reason and motivation for her decision. You might say that Orpah, just a daughter-in-law and her sister-in-law, but Ruth was more than that. She was, in fact, a daughter in love, not just a daughter-in-law. She clung to Naomi and she would not leave her. She was loyal to her and faithful because she was loyal and faithful to Naomi's God. It's a wonderful thing to have a daughter-in-law, but it's a far more wonderful thing to have a daughter in love, like Ruth. Do you see the same spirit at work that was in Ruth as well as in Caleb? It's that spirit which is best described in Joshua 14 as one who wholly follows the Lord. Ruth chose, as Caleb, according to the affinity with God that she had come to know, not according to the rational dictates of the circumstances. The path of faith that leads to life always has this mysterious element. It's an element of the humanly inexplicable about it. Faith is not theoretical. It is intensely practical. It's not abstract. It's concrete. But faith is not pragmatism, because pragmatism has its spring in self and not God. It says in Psalm 36 verse 9, "For with you is the fountain of life. In your light we see light." So a faith decision is not based upon our own insight or perceptions, but it is based on wholly following the Lord. We do not carve out our own paths in life, but with God is the fountain of life, and He shows us the path of life. I do not walk or decide where to go according to my own light or insight, but in His light, I will see the light. And once again, think of the far-reaching consequences of Ruth's choice. What if she had not taken that path and stayed back at Moab? She did not merely follow her heart by intuition, as the natural man would describe it, but rather she followed the God she had come to know. She wholly followed the Lord, as Caleb did. It would have made an interesting story to compare and to consider the latter ends of Orpah and Ruth, or for that matter, the two, Joshua and Caleb, versus the other 10. We don't know or hear about Orpah again, but we know the beautiful story of Ruth, for she married not only a wealthy man, but a godly man in the person of Boaz. And they not only lived happily ever after, but had a great legacy, for they became the great-grandparents of the greatest king that Israel had known, that is David. And in Matthew chapter 1, we read that from that same lineage and genealogy came our Lord Jesus Christ. What significant consequences there are to a right, good, and godly choice and decision made in the will of God. We read something about how the Lord leads us in Isaiah chapter 30, verse 18. Therefore, the Lord will wait, that he may be gracious to you, and therefore he will be exalted, that he may have mercy on you. For the Lord is a God of justice. Blessed are all those who wait for him. Often we think in terms of waiting for God, for his time. But here in verse 18 of Isaiah 30, it begins by talking about the Lord waiting. And sometimes he waits for us. He waits for us that he may be gracious to us, so that when we are ready, he will be able to answer in such a way that he will be exalted. So in seeking God's mind at an intersection in life, we wait for him as well as with him. We wait for him to show us the way as well as to do it in his time. Verse 20 says, "And though the Lord gives you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, yet your teachers will not be moved into a corner anymore, but your eyes shall see your teachers." Sometimes part of this waiting involves us eating the bread of adversity and the water of affliction. It's not a pleasant diet, but it's our daily diet nevertheless for a night season where we need to instruct ourselves in addition to receiving his counsels. And one of the best places to be made more pliable and teachable and moldable in the hands of God is in going through what I call the school of suffering, SOS. It's a good school, although not a popular one. And this is the reference to your teachers not being moved into a corner anymore, but your eyes shall see your teachers. You know how it is with children that sometimes they are taught the same good things repeatedly over and over again. And yet somehow, mysteriously, the teachers or the teaching seem to have eluded them completely. They are moved into a corner of their mind. They do not see it until they go through things in their lives which make them ready for the teaching. And what has been pushed into a corner now takes center stage. And thus, they learn through trial and error how to make the right choices and decisions according to the will of God. Now, here's the verse that I want to get to in verse 21. "Your ears shall hear a word behind you saying, 'This is the way, walk in it,' whenever you turn to the right hand or whenever you turn to the left." What a word of assurance this is from God the Father, who oversees and watches over us from behind and shows us the path of life that we must take in front of us. When we are at the crossroads of life, when we are unsure which way to turn, to the left or to the right or to go straight ahead, what a blessed thing to have this assurance in our hearts, to hear God say, "This is the way, walk in it." This is just the natural outcome of our relationship to God as his children. In evaluating alternatives for a choice, beware of what may be called the test of the second best. Sometimes there is a distraction or competition alongside the real and the right choice. It may look equally attractive or even more attractive, especially to others. When considering apparent alternatives or options, don't trade God's highest and best for the second best. In God's economy, he looks only for winners or overcomers. Runners-up are simply also-rans. Of course, you can finish the race and say, "I've also run in that race." But far better and more to be desired is to go for God's best, not even for the second best. The only way we can be sure of not being distracted by a second best is to be single-eyed and single-minded in wholly following the Lord, having the spirit of Caleb and of Ruth. If you do that, if you live in God's will, then decision-making is easy because there is basically only one choice, and you will experience God's assurance. This is the way, walk in it. Whenever you turn to the right hand or whenever you turn to the left. And may God continue to refresh you through His presence and reach you through His assuring word.
The Lord sometimes waits so that He will be exalted. So we wait not only for Him, but with Him for His time. Thank you, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And join us again tomorrow for part 3 of Going Forward. Right now, though, we would love to hear from you, and I have several ways through which you can be in contact. You can send us a text message at 9431-3813, or you can write to us at Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road, Post Office, Singapore 915-714. You can go to our Facebook page and leave your comments there or share some views with some of the other folks you see. Also, I invite you to visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, where you can listen to the program right online. And Times of Refreshing has launched an iPhone app that allows users to directly access the broadcast messages and the podcasts right from their iPhones. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.